From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. This hour, we look at success in business and ask the question, what's happiness got to do with it? In 1999, 24-year-old Tony Hsieh sold an internet company to Microsoft for $265 million. He's now the CEO of the online retailer Zappos. Hsieh writes and speaks about delivering happiness through great customer service. Hsieh's in Iowa, and we'll talk to him in the first half hour. Then we'll explore entrepreneurial training at the college level in Iowa and speak with University of Northern Iowa student Nick Cash. He's a finalist for College Entrepreneur of the Year. How to find happiness at work, right after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Glad you could join us over the noon hour. In this hour, we explore success in business and ask the question, what's happiness got to do with it? My first guest is Tony Hsieh. He's the CEO of the online retailer Zappos.com. After debuting as the highest-ranking newcomer in Fortune magazine's annual Best Companies to Work For list in 2009, Zappos was acquired by Amazon in a deal valued at over $1.2 billion. But this was not Tony Hsieh's first taste of big success. Back in 1999, at the age of 24, Tony Hsieh sold his internet company, Link Exchange, to Microsoft for $265 million. Hsieh writes and speaks about delivering happiness through great customer service. His new book is titled Delivering Happiness, A Path to Profits, Passion, and Purpose. In it, he applies research from the science of happiness to running a business. And Tony Hsieh joins us in the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Iowa City. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us, Tony.
Thanks for having me.
And I understand you are in the midst of a three-month Delivering Happiness bus tour, coast to coast. That is what is bringing you through Iowa.
Yep. This is the third city that we're on during the bus tour, so just at the beginning, and it's been great meeting all the people from the different cities and really just spreading this message that you don't need to separate happiness from the workplace.
Okay. You gave a speech presentation last night at the Engler Theater in Iowa City. What are the main points you want to drive home about this relationship between happiness and success in business?
Well, I think maybe 50 years ago, companies felt like they had to choose between maximizing profits and making customers happy through better customer service or making employees happy by having stronger and better company cultures. But I think we're just at the beginning of a very special time where it's actually possible to have it all because information travels so quickly and everyone's hyper-connected, whether it's through Twitter or Facebook or blogs and so on. And you can actually focus on making customers happy, focus on making employees happy, and have that drive business profits and growth. And essentially, the point of the book and the bus tour is to spread the message that you can use happiness as a business model.
Mm-hmm. Every CEO wants to have a happy crew on board the ship, whatever ship it may be. How would you say your very successful business is different than other very successful business?
Well, for us, our belief is that culture should be the number one priority of the company. And if we get the culture right, then most of the other stuff, such as delivering great customer service or building a long-term enduring brand, will just happen naturally on its own. And for us, we've formalized the definition of our culture into 10 core values. If you do a Google search for Zappos core values, you can see what those are. But the difference is, you know, a lot of companies and especially bigger corporations have, they might call them core values or guiding principles or so on. But the problem is usually they're very lofty sounding and they kind of read like a press release that the marketing department put out. And maybe you learn about it on day one of orientation, but then it becomes this meaningless plaque on the lobby wall that no one pays attention to. And for us, we wanted to come up with core values that we could commit to, and by committing to, meaning that we're actually willing to hire and fire people based on whether they're living up to those core values, independent of their actual job performance. And when you use that criteria, it's actually a pretty hard list to come up with.
You're the CEO, as we mentioned, of the tremendously successful online retailer Zappos.com, and hasn't been around that long, what, about a decade?
11 years.
Yeah. 11 years, and now sold recently to Amazon, $1.2 billion. You describe in your book a narrative of how Zappos was built up, some of the key decisions that you took here. Can you point to an instance that you bring out in your book, a key decision that you made, and what it has to do with this research in happiness, how happiness drove or guided that decision?
Well, when we started, our vision was let's just become the number one retailer of shoes and basically we'll be about the best selection of shoes online. And about 4 years into it, we sat around and asked ourselves, what do we want to be about when we grow up? What do we want to stand for? And that's when we decided let's build the Zappos brand to be about the very best customer service. And this was something that we accidentally stumbled into, but then learned later on from books such as Good to Great and Tribal Leadership, where they researched what separated the great companies from just the good ones in terms of long-term financial performance. And one of the key ingredients they found was this concept of having a higher vision and greater purpose for companies beyond just money or profits or being number one in a market. And so when we communicated this bigger vision and higher purpose to our employees, a funny thing happened that we didn't anticipate. We found that suddenly employees were a lot more passionate and enthusiastic about the company. And when customers called, they can sense that the person on the other end of the phone really wanted to provide great service and wasn't there just for a paycheck. And when vendors came, we found that they wanted to stay longer and visit us more frequently. So all of these things had this multiplicative snowball effect that really drove a lot of our growth over the years.
Mm-hmm. Can these principles, this idea you're talking about, apply to any business out there, whether you're an online retailer for shoes and other apparel, as Zappos is?
Yeah, and it's actually been really interesting because what the second ingredient that the research has found is important is having really strong cultures. And so we've actually had companies from completely different industries come, and we help guide them through the process of figuring out their own core values that are right for their company. And then they report back that their customers are now happier because they're getting better customer service, and employees are happier because the core values of the company match their own personal values, and the culture is getting stronger. And we've even received before and after pictures of these companies' headquarters. And then in a down economy, they're reporting that their profits are up and their revenues are up.
Mm-hmm. In the book, you tie in the research that's done about happiness. It's actually fairly recently that we've decided as a culture to research happiness. You write that happiness is about four things. What are those four things?
Well, there's actually a few different frameworks of happiness, and one of the frameworks I talk about in my book is it's about perceived control, perceived progress, connectedness, meaning the number and depth of your relationships, and being part of something bigger than yourself. And what's interesting is you can not only apply these concepts to your own personal life, but we've applied them to business at Zappos. So very quick example for perceived progress. Instead of giving raises every 18 months like we used to for one of our departments, we now give smaller raises every 6 months. And what's interesting is nothing has actually changed over a 3-year time period. They still go through the same training and certification and so on. But because they're getting smaller, more frequent promotions, they are actually happier, and it doesn't cost the company anything.
And I also read in the book that you tie promotions to an advance in a person's skill set. So you leave it to the person's individual tastes or ambition to learn the 20 skills that they might need in the future, right?
Exactly. And that goes back to the perceived control part of the framework. And so it's really interesting how you can actually just take these concepts and apply them to different parts of the business.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are business people out listening to us right now, Tony, saying, sure, it's great to have this kind of culture. You've got a great internet business here, but I have the business that I have. I want to know how to get from where I am now, and perhaps some of my workers are not so happy. Perhaps they don't have too much passion, and I would like more. Where do I start? How do I get from A to B?
Well, I think it really starts with defining the corporate core values of your organization. And that is feedback we get sometimes, oh, you're a special case, Zappos. But if we, for example, know of the Atlanta Refrigeration Company. They do refrigeration repairs out in the field in Atlanta, Georgia. And they went back after we helped guide them through the process and figured out their own core values. And now their culture is very strong. So I think the most important thing is making sure that you have employees whose personal values match the corporate core values. And that means you need to make sure that you're hiring and firing and doing performance reviews based on those values, independent of their specific job function.
Mm-hmm. How do you know, very hard decision for a manager, for a business leader, how do you know when you you've reached the end of the line, you have to part ways with an employee? What are the signals for you?
Well, ultimately, when it comes down to values, it's just whether there's a values match. And the one that trips us up the most during the hiring process is the be humble value. One of our values is to be humble. And there's a lot of smart, talented people out there that are also egotistical. And for us, it's not even a question. We're willing to, even though we know they can make an immediate impact on our top or bottom line, we won't hire them. Whereas a lot of other businesses and corporations will say, well, this person might rub you the wrong way personality-wise, but because he's going to add a lot of value, we're going to hire him. And that's how company cultures start going downhill, when you keep making compromises like that over and over.
So a very talented person with a big ego who shows it is immediately X'd off.
Yeah, even if we know they're going to, even if they can increase our business 25% over the next year, we're willing to walk away from that short-term gain for the long-term health of the company.
And why? Because that person would damage company culture more than that person brought to it?
In the long run, yes. And so it's really just about making the trade-off between what's best for the company long-term versus what's best for the company in the short-term.
Mm-hmm. In reading your book, Tony Hsieh, it doesn't sound too much like your education was much part of wanting to be an entrepreneur. It seems like the drive is something you had from the age where you were very young. What part of successful entrepreneurship is an innate part of personality, and what can be learned?
Well, I think that for me, I like to define the entrepreneurial spirit as this combination of optimism and creativity. And I think, you know, some of that is innate, but that's also something that people can choose, whether they want to take a positive or more optimistic outlook on life in general. And growing up, one of my favorite TV shows we were just talking about earlier is MacGyver, because he could take paperclip and duct tape and for me, being an entrepreneur is all about playing MacGyver with business.
Okay, we want to take a short break and also listen to a little bit of a video that was posted to the Zappos blog within a few days. It opens with a girl playing a hula hoop, a guy in a hot dog costume, and we're going to hear some of it going into the break. This is taken in the Zappos offices. Is this part of Zappos culture?
Yeah, one of our core values is to create fun and a little weirdness, and that's really our way of saying that really everyone's a little weird, and we recognize and celebrate each person's individuality.
Tony Hsieh is with us, CEO of Zappos.com. We'll talk about a little weirdness, expand on that when we come back, and in a moment we'll be joined by the person who assembles the Zappos culture book and is also the chief happiness officer of Tony's book, Jen Lim. When we come back, this is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio. This is a little taste of Zappos culture.
Hello, welcome right this way. We're so glad you're here today. You may wonder what we do. Sit back, relax, and we'll tell you.
We started.
And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. Over the noon hour, I'm Ben Kiefer on our news stream here on Iowa Public Radio. And this hour, we're exploring business success and asking the question, what's happiness got to do with it? My guest in this first half hour, Tony Hsieh, the CEO of Zappos.com, just sold recently for $1.2 billion. Also the author of Delivering Happiness, A Path to Profits, Passion, and Purpose. Tony explaining in our first part of our program that this goes far outside of what Zappos is about. It's a culture of happiness that can be used in any entrepreneurial situation. And we heard a little bit of the video of the corporate culture representing that. And it was a lot of fun to be seen in that video. And I want to introduce now Jen Lim. She is the chief happiness officer for Delivering Happiness, the book. Tony's backup brain, as described in the book. And Jen Lim assembles the culture book of Zappos every year and is on this cross-country delivering happiness bus tour. Good afternoon. Welcome to you, Jen Lim.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What exactly does a chief happiness officer do? What are the responsibilities you're given?
Well, I guess the background to that is that Delivering Happiness is actually a separate entity from Zappos. And so it's evolved into its startup of its own. We have about 15 people, contractors under the helm of Delivering Happiness. And so while Tony's still running the business of Zappos, then it's pretty much we're business partners in the Delivering Happiness entity, and I'm running the Delivering Happiness show.
Okay, you're also responsible for the Zappos culture book, which we haven't talked about yet. This is something that happened at Zappos where all employees were invited to submit essays, and they weren't supposed to cheat and talk with their friends about what Zappos culture meant to them, right?
Right. That's right. So, yeah, it just became an idea about 5-6 years ago that we just wanted to capture the essence of what Zappos culture means, and what better way to do that from actually the employees themselves. So everyone submits 2 or 3 paragraphs about what they think Zappos culture means to them, and it's totally unedited. We don't take out anything except for corrections for typos or grammar. Mm-hmm. So what it became is it evolved into something that really represented what Zappos culture is all about, because it comes, you know, exactly from the employees.
Any negative criticisms come into that?
Definitely. We encourage people to be honest, so everything comes out. So it's a good snapshot for people on all realms to see what exactly what's wrong and what's right.
As Tony was saying a little earlier, Zappos is proud to say that weirdness is a part of the company culture. Tony, you're there too. Either one of you, tell me what is being a little weird in a corporate culture environment?
Well, our belief is that everyone's a little weird somehow, and it's really just more a fun way of saying that we really recognize and celebrate each person's individuality, and we want their true personalities to come out and shine in the workplace, because especially in corporate America, there's so many people where they're a different person at home on weekends versus when they come in the office, and mm-hmm. they leave a little part of themselves or a big part of themselves at home. And what we found is when people are truly comfortable being themselves in the office, that's when the creativity shines, and that's when true friendships are being formed.
I get that, but where does – I mean, some people with their weirdness go to extremes. Now, where do you draw the line between that's weird and that's fine, and or that's weird and that's a little unprofessional?
Yeah, well, we're not looking for psychotic, and actually the specific core value says a little weirdness.
Okay. So the little is important in connection with the weirdness.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Also in our studio today in Iowa City is the person to whom which this book was dedicated, Delivering Happiness. And this is Ava. Ava, I didn't get your last name. Ava?
Zach.
Ava Zach. And this book was dedicated to you. How old are you?
I'm 11.
11 years old. Tony, can you say why you dedicated the book to Ava?
Yeah, I've known Ava for several years now, and she represents the entrepreneurial spirit amongst kids better than anyone else that I've known. When I first met her, she Skyped me and had this idea for dog tattoos, which I'll let her explain.
Dog tattoos. Was. So what is your idea? What was your idea?
When my dog got older, his nose started to turn pink, so I came up with an organic dog dye that made his nose black again for a temporary time.
Uh-huh. You didn't, and has this idea taken off?
Yeah, we have a website called Puppy Paints, and there's different colors for the dog's noses. Yeah,
but that's only one of her ideas, and she now has two, is it two chickens in your garage, which I'm sure your parents are thrilled about.
Yeah.
What do you want to do with the chickens, Ava?
To my neighbors, sell a dozen of organic eggs to their house, and they can subscribe for once a month or a mm-hmm. week.
And you had this idea before the big egg recall.
Yeah.
You're a prognosticator as well, as a great entrepreneur.
And then the doggy idea.
Oh, when my mom walks my dog, she hates to pick up his droppings. So I came up with an idea that you put a small cone over it, and kids around the neighborhood could pick it up and get money.
That is great. You're going to be a wealth of ideas improving our life for your entire life. Now, Tony, in the second half of our program, we're going to be talking about in Iowa, we have something called the John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center in five sites around the state. And they actually get kids very early, not quite as early as Ava, but in the teens. What is the advantage of fostering entrepreneurial spirits and ideas at such an early age?
I think it's really just helping adjust people's worldview, because some people, I think if you learn as a kid that, and it's really sad because I see this so often, where if you fail at something, then people tend to label themselves as a failure, when really part of the point of writing the book, Delivering Happiness, was to show that there are no overnight successes, and I made a lot of mistakes along the way. But
tell me something business-wise really stupid that Tony Hsieh, CEO of Zappos, did.
Well, I decided to create a worm farm and spend my money, or I guess my parents' money, on a worm farm, which didn't quite work out. But all of these failures are really just part of the path of getting to where you are, and they're a necessary step. And if you are afraid to fail, then I think that's why people stop having that entrepreneurial spirit.
Mm-hmm. I was interested to see in your book that for a while you were living the high life. You admitted that in the book, going to raves, even converted a loft space into a space where you could throw huge parties. How does your – looking back now, how does your enthusiasm for raves, intense partying, fit in with your business success?
Well, I think the biggest thing I got out of that experience was this feeling of connectedness, which later I found out through the science of happiness research that actually is a very important component of happiness. And so that's why part of the reason why we pay so much attention to culture at Zappos is because it's not just about going in to get a paycheck. It's about forming meaningful relationships that would still be there even if Zappos disappeared tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. I suppose if you have a very happy culture at work, you don't have as many people calling in sick, for instance, either.
Yeah, turnover is lower and productivity is higher. There's actually a lot of studies that show a link between employee engagement and employee productivity. And one of the best predictors of employee engagement is whether you have a best friend at work or the number of friends that you have at work. Mm-hmm. So it's actually good for business. It's not just a feel-good thing.
Is your work being studied, this book being looked at by academic spheres?
Well, it's actually why we're here in Iowa City, because at University of Iowa, a professor contacted us, and it's required reading for one of the classes. And now I've actually, you know, the book's been out for a couple months, and now we've gotten interest from a lot of different professors from all different states and universities that are making the book required reading. So that's pretty exciting.
Tony, we have about a minute left, and you end your book by something that speaks to the individuals reading it, questions that a person should ask him or herself if they want to get on this path or maintain this path. Give us some of those questions that we can use now after you're gone to ask how we're leading our lives and how we're looking at our own work.
Well, so one of the questions I asked myself is, what if everyone acted a certain way in any situation? And so, for example, if you cut someone off on the highway or someone cuts you off, and whatever your reaction is, whatever my reaction is, I think about how everyone else would what the world would look like if everyone did the same thing. And you know, basically try to frame things in the framework of how do you make the world a better place.
Okay, Tony Hsieh, thank you very much for being with us, and continued good luck and safety on your travel in your Delivering Happiness bus tour. How do people find out about that bus tour, where it may be coming in the future?
Just go to www.deliveringhappinessbus.com.
Tony Hsieh, CEO of Zappos.com, thank you very much. Jen Lim, Chief Happiness Officer for Delivering Happiness, and Tony's backup brain.
Thank you.
You're probably the only one with that description, aren't you, on your business card? Okay, Jen Lim, thank you very much. And, of course, thanks to 11-year-old Ava for all your ideas, your entrepreneurial spirit being in our studio today. Thank you very much. Ava, bye-bye. We'll explore when we come back entrepreneurial training at the college level in Iowa. We'll speak with the University of Northern Iowa student Nick Cash. He's a finalist for College Entrepreneur of the Year with something he created. It's called the Book Hatchery. We'll talk about that when we come back. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. And this hour, we've been talking about success in business. The first half hour, happiness was the focus with Tony Hsieh. as you may have heard. And next, a look at entrepreneurial training at a college level in Iowa. Joining us now, Catherine Cota Uyar. She's the Associate Director of the John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center at the University of Northern Iowa, joining us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Cedar Falls. Catherine, welcome to our program. I hope I didn't do too bad on your last name.
Thank you, Ben. Just fine.
Also joining us, Nick Cash. He's a junior at the University of Northern Iowa, doubly majoring in economics and computer science, founder of the Book Hatchery. We'll hear about that in a moment. One of five finalists in Entrepreneur Magazine's College Entrepreneur of 2010 contest. And welcome to you, Nick Cash. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And let's talk a little bit before we get to find out what this potentially award-winning idea, the Book Hatchery, is all about. Catherine, tell us about the John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center. I know there are five of these centers in the state, one at the University of Northern Iowa. Tell us the idea behind the centers.
In 1996, John Papa John wanted to make Iowa more entrepreneurial, so he chose the primary focus of starting on student entrepreneurship, believing that if you start entrepreneurs younger, then they will stay in the state and grow and start businesses.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so what kind of success have you seen over the years? What is your track record so far?
The centers have been highly successful over the years. As we continue to age, we get better and better at what we do, and we're offering more and more programs. We do now offer programs at a few of the centers in youth entrepreneurship. So like Ava earlier, we're starting with fourth graders and fifth graders and then doing junior high and high school programs in addition to the college programs that the five centers offer.
Ava was quite delightful, don't you think?
Ava was very much like a lot of the students that we've seen in the youth entrepreneur camps that are offered by our center here at UNI, offered by the University of Iowa, and offered by North Iowa Area Community College. Great ideas coming out of fourth and fifth graders.
When you see someone so young, hear someone so young with that entrepreneurial spark, someone who comes alive thinking of new ideas, does that tell you something about where this spirit comes from? Is it in a person when they're born? And then you just have to foster it?
Yes, absolutely. We find that the young students, both males and females, believe in the opportunity of creating their own business and don't see barriers. And so it's incumbent upon us as educators to nurture that young spirit and give them the resources and education that they need to grow that so that they can see entrepreneurship as an option for the future.
Nick Cash, let's talk about your project, potentially an award winner. You're a finalist in Entrepreneur Magazine's College Entrepreneur of 2010 contest. And this was done under the auspices of the John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center at the University of Northern Iowa. What is your idea, this Book Hatchery?
Book Hatchery is a software publishing tool for authors to help them format their books correctly and then publish them digitally as ebooks. So that means getting onto Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all of those different retail outlets. And there really wasn't a good way to do that, so I kind of made one centralized platform where authors can kind of sign on, put their book up, and then it'll kind of take care of the rest.
It'll take care of the rest? How so?
It'll actually format their books correctly and then submit them to Amazon and all those other online retailers so that they don't have to manage that manually.
Okay. And how did you become interested in this? What was the idea that or the moment that you said this might be something?
I think it all kind of started in the last fall, actually, when I was taking one of the entrepreneurship classes at UNI, and we had to do mock financials for a business, and I was thinking, well, what if I just sold an ebook? What would that mean? And I found there really wasn't a good way to do it. There wasn't you had to manage each different retailer on your own, and it was just kind of a pain because each one has different formatting rules for your books and things. So I figured as a software engineer, I could just make a tool that does this for me, and then I figured I would just share that with everyone. So. Mm-hmm.
Catherine, is this really something that we can look for, something that all good entrepreneurial ideas have in common is the entrepreneur comes up against a rub in life, something that is not working in life, and then finds a solution for it?
There are actually about 10 ways that people come up with ideas, but serendipity is one of them, or solving a problem is another one, or frequently having expertise in a particular area and wanting then to advance that particular area is another.
Okay, we want to reach out to our listeners for the rest of the hour. We have with us Catherine Kota Uyar. She's the Associate Director of the John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center at the University of Northern Iowa. Nick Cash, one of five finalists in Entrepreneur Magazine's College Entrepreneur of 2010 contest. If you have a question or comment about entrepreneurship, we'd like you to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Perhaps you had a great entrepreneurial idea. Tell us about it. 1-866-780-9100 or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Nick, what are your motivations for doing this?
My background goes back quite a ways as far as developing software. And once you've done enough internships and jobs, you kind of get a feel about whether you want to work in kind of the professional environment. And I found that I like making new things. I really like making new video games or new websites, different projects. And in a traditional job, you really don't have the flexibility to go out and just do that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of handed down to you. And so I really just wanted to go after something and kind of get behind a project. So that's kind of how
I'm hearing something. You're reminding me of something Tony Hsieh said in the first half hour, perceived control. I don't know if you heard that part. So the entrepreneur, that this aspect of entrepreneurship, that you are free to follow something that you think might grow big.
Absolutely.
And you're not locked into a corporate culture that doesn't allow you to do that.
Yes.
Uh-huh. How big is money a driver for you? I mean, Tony Hsieh has more money than I'm sure he could – if he lived 10 lifetimes, he wouldn't run out of money. But he's still going. He's still enthusiastic.
Well, it's important. I'm not going to lie there. But it's really not the main focus, because I designed this service as something I wanted to use myself. And as I hop around on different projects in my spare time, eventually I can see different ways that I could turn them into businesses, but how much money they make isn't usually at the forefront of my mind. And I think most entrepreneurs would agree that passion takes you a lot further than just kind of the pursuit of money.
Catherine, how do you weigh in on that? How big of a motivator should or can money be?
Nick is absolutely correct. The driving force for many entrepreneurs is to create their own destiny, something they have interest in, what's their passion, and wanting to control that passion. Money is not a driving force for many entrepreneurs, because the reality is it does take quite a while to actually make money in your own small business. Some statistics out there will say that it's 3 to 5 years before you're actually cash flow positive. So you go through quite a bit, and you've got to have a lot of passion to get you through that.
Okay, let's go to our first caller, 1-866-780-9100. Talking about success in business, entrepreneurship for the rest of the hour, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email address. From Windsor Heights, Max is joining us. Good afternoon, Max. What's on your mind?
Well, I run a handyman business that has worked out pretty well for me. It started out that I did all the jobs myself, and then evolved to where I had some helpers, and now I have subcontractors that do virtually all the work for me, and that seems to be working out pretty well. I do the advertising and promotion and take the phone calls and publish the brochures and so forth. But I'd like to do some other business also, and I never really know if something is a good thing to go into. Mm. How do you know if this – because some businesses, I think, are more likely to thrive than other businesses. And I wonder if they have some comments on that.
Okay, so either starting another business or branching off into another area with your own business. Catherine, what ideas can you give Max in Windsor Heights?
Actually, he's probably at a good stage. When he tells me that he's got employees that are now handling the functions of his handyman business, then he can look at other opportunities. One of the things that many entrepreneurs need to avoid early on is trying to do too much and be too many things. But he's obviously got the handyman part going. He's got employees that are working well with that, so he can now start to explore some other avenues and other options for his businesses.
Mm-hmm. So Max is also asking, I think, how do we know what ideas we jump onto? Are there set criteria that are fairly fail-safe in telling us good idea, not a good idea?
frequently we're going to want to look at where our skill set and our knowledge set lies. What is it that we know and what is it that we do well? If you're looking in that area, then you've got something to base off of. If Max is in handyman work, is lawn care or yard care or small construction or something like that, that would be a natural step. He might not want to do something totally different and go into retail clothing if he has no knowledge in that. So we try to stay within our focus area. That way we can also then market to our current customers because it would be an add-on business or another extension of our business. So we've got some potential customers there. So I would probably encourage him to think, what are the other things he's hearing from his customers in his handyman service that they're needing or wanting? And is it something that's in his knowledge or experience area that he could add on to his business?
Max, does that help you, give you something to go on?
That is a great answer. That is very helpful. Thank you very much.
Okay, Max, thank you for calling 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Now, the Papa John Entrepreneurial Centers across the state, are there online resources that people can turn to, people like Max?
Many of the centers are in conjunction or host workshops in conjunction with their small business development centers, or the centers themselves host workshops in all kinds of knowledge areas to assist small business owners. So I would encourage anybody who's interested to contact their Papa John Center, and I'll list for you those five centers: the University of Iowa, Iowa State University, UNI here, of course, and Drake University and North Iowa Area Community College, to contact those centers or check out their websites and find out what workshops or resources or counseling that they have that they can provide to small business owners. It is the mission of the Papa John Centers to spur entrepreneurship in Iowa, and we do that by helping people when they have questions and giving them resources so that they can succeed. We all benefit that way.
I understand there's a student incubator at UNI. Explain, Catherine, what that is. And Nick Cash is a part of it.
Absolutely. Nick is one of the successful students that we have in the incubator, and we have graduated some other very successful students with some successful businesses into the economy. Our student business incubator here at UNI is actually twofold. We have physical office space that provides 10 offices for more than 10 student businesses, and then we have what's called the affiliate program. Currently in the affiliate program, we have about 42 businesses that are running. The affiliates get all of the resources and services. They just aren't ready for an office space yet.
Okay. And Nick Cash, what have you found to be the most valuable aspects of being in this student incubator?
I think the most important thing is definitely that we have professionals there to help us. So Catherine and Lori Wagee, who's our incubator manager, are just down the hall from us and can answer a lot of the questions we have. So with the business that I run, I know a lot of the software and kind of the technical side, but I didn't know a lot about necessarily marketing or how to put together financials and stuff like that. And they've been extremely helpful with helping me put that type of information together.
Questions for questions from would-be or interested entrepreneurs, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Bill is joining us from Marion County. Hi, Bill. Are you an entrepreneur?
No, I'm not, but I work with them, and I'm really interested in Nick's story. Nick, where are you from? Were you entrepreneurial in high school, and what suggestions do you have for reaching out to high school students and showing them that small business might be an option for them?
Well, I'm from Cedar Falls, so I didn't travel far when I went to college. I did pursue entrepreneurial paths in high school. I actually started doing freelance programming when I was in 10th grade, so that means taking contracts from people online and writing some code for them. We had one entrepreneurship class at the high school, and it was a total failure. I think the only good thing we had was we got to watch a lecture by the guy who made Earthlink or something like that.
Why did it fail, looking back? Can you tell us, Nick?
The whole class was supposed to run one business, and it was like 45 students. And so about four of us got really involved and kind of took it and ran off with it. But the rest of the students just kind of meandered, didn't really help out. And so it just kind of ended up being a joke where, you know, four of us were doing a lot of this work and the other students were twiddling their thumbs.
Bill, it sounds like you may be an educator and that's why you're asking this question. Is that true?
No, I actually work with the government, but we help support entrepreneurs, and I'm really intrigued by Nick's story, and I wish him the best.
Well,
okay,
thank you.
Bill, calling from Marion County, thank you very much. 1-866-780-9100. Your experiences, your stories, your questions about entrepreneurship, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Failure is something that Tony Hsieh mentioned. It's something that we've talked about here. I want to ask about how we should view failure, a healthy way to view failure as an entrepreneur. Let me start with Nick and then go to Catherine. Nick, you've had failures before this great success, Book Hatchery.
Absolutely. I think one of the disservices of our education system really is that we really stigmatize failure. I mean, getting an F is the worst possible thing. It really docks your GPA, and so you're always really terrified of that. And if you're not really willing, or that really impairs your ability to take jumps and kind of jump into things where and get involved, and that's very, very important, I think.
Mm-hmm. So, Catherine, how are you coaching people? Don't have a fear of failure. Is that one of the messages at John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center?
There is no failure. When somebody doesn't succeed at something, people will spend more time analyzing the reasons why they did not succeed, and that makes them a better entrepreneur in the long run for each of their future endeavors. If somebody succeeds at something, most people are not highly reflective of a success, so they spend less time analyzing it.
Mm. Tell me some of the top reasons people in business fail that you know of, Catherine.
Actually, one of the biggest failures for folks going into business is growing too quickly. You need to really have a plan when you're an entrepreneur of when you're offering your product, how much you're offering, how fast you're growing, are your resources in place to be able to grow you? Do you have enough people to fulfill the demand that your customers are giving you? So growth is very important. Managing that growth and knowing that you've got all of the resources and everything in place to grow at a steady rate.
And you wanted to add something to that, Nick.
Yeah, that actually kind of reminds me of Tony Hsieh's story a little bit, where he took Link Exchange before he got involved with Zappos and grew it very, very rapidly. And it got to the point one day where he realized he didn't really like working for this company anymore because they had grown so fast that the culture was just not where he wanted to work. So I think that's a good example of you definitely don't want to grow too quickly.
A tweet from Nolan. Nolan writes, I love the independence of what self-employment can offer, but what are your thoughts on job security? What do you have to be prepared for in those terms, Catherine, if you want to be an entrepreneur?
Well, the reality is when you're an entrepreneur, you don't have job security. You are the business because you are starting the business. So it's incumbent upon you to get out there and make the sales and satisfy the customers. Now, the advantage is if you don't succeed at that particular opportunity, then you can perhaps recraft it after some analysis or figure out a different avenue to take. And there's certainly always the option of getting a job from somebody.
An email from Carolyn in Waterloo for Catherine. What kind of interest are you seeing at the center in social entrepreneurship? For instance, businesses with a social benefit mission. What kind of support do you offer these unique enterprises?
Thank you so much, Carolyn, for asking that question. It's a wonderful question. We're seeing an increase in social entrepreneurship. The interesting thing that we're seeing at the center is many of our for-profit businesses in the incubator are adding on a social entrepreneurship component. So not only do those businesses want to do well for the for-profit, they want to do good for the nonprofit arm of their company.
How has the downturn in the economy affected the entrepreneurial center and the interest in the center?
Absolutely has not. We were more busy this summer and have been the just couple of weeks of the new fall semester more busy than in past years. The interest keeps growing and we keep getting better.
Okay. Nick, before we go, I want to make sure we have people know how to find out more information about this contest.
Sure.
Perhaps I understand people can vote for you.
Yes. Actually, I need everybody to vote. Voting closes September 10th. So please go to bookhatchery.com. There's a link that you can click to vote for me. And your votes will help me win this competition for Entrepreneur Magazine.
Okay, quickly, perhaps we can squeeze in this last call. Bob in Cedar Rapids, if you can make it short, Bob.
Just a quick question. Talking about the camps for the youngsters, have they done anything to work with the educators in the schools to help create more of a more of classes or programs, kind of like the one that Nick talked about earlier, but that didn't go well?
Catherine, are you reaching down into the schools?
Actually, if you go to the Jacobson Institute for Youth Entrepreneurship at the University of Iowa, they have numerous successful programs for youth entrepreneurs and programs for the teachers so that they can bring entrepreneurship into the classroom. They're highly successful.
Thank you, Bob, for that question. A quick question, Catherine, before we have to go. How often do students continue their business that they started at UNI?
We have about a 50-50 sort of graduation. 50% of the students graduate out with the business that they intend to run, and 50% graduate out and go to work for companies that realize an entrepreneurial bent is going to be very beneficial.
Mm-hmm. And briefly, is that how you measure success, or are there more measures of success at the Entrepreneurial Center?
Success is measured in, did somebody learn something and was the activity of value?
Okay, very good. We'll leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us. Catherine Kota Uyar, Associate Director of the John Papa John Entrepreneurial Center at the University of Northern Iowa. Catherine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Nick Cash, and good luck with being one of the five finalists in Entrepreneur Magazine's College Entrepreneur of 2010 contest. Once again, people, to find out more about it and to vote for you, Nick, where do people go?
Bookhatchery.com.
Bookhatchery.com. Good luck with your entrepreneurial spirit and future, Nick Cash.
Thanks.
The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins, Jeff Schmidt, and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance from Christina Sarnelli. Technical support from Dennis Reese. Also thanks to Phil Moss in Cedar Falls. Podcasting and on-demand audio available by going to iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.